information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
We care.
Here to border on shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
We did the next best thing. We annihilated the world before your very ears. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 162 of Media Monarchy. It's March 19th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com, where we fight the net, fake news, and real threats. Packed cars, virtual flags, and cyberpocalypse. Panic, blunders, and the 9/11 line. Broken glass, ominous signs, and occult origins. Corporate coffee, Lehman and Geithner, police state updates, census, and complaints. All that, and so much more. March 19th, 2010, episode 162 of MediaMonarchy.com.
Stars come and fly, oh red, I've seen their worlds inside my head. They connect with the fall of man, they breathe you in, then dive as deep as they can. There's nothing you can do for them. They are the force between when the sunlight is arising. There's nothing you can say to him. He is in our heart, and the space has been broken. By the light of the plasma streams, we keep switched on all through the night while we sleep. There's nothing you can do for them. They are the force between when the sunlight is arising. There's nothing you can say to her. I am without. Space has been broken.
Broken.
new music from Gorillaz, their new record, Plastic Beach. I don't know about all the guest stars. I'd rather just hear that guy, Damon Albarn, sing on the Gorillaz tunes. Of course, he of Blur, The Good, the Bad, and the Queen, Lovage, Deltron 3030, on and on. The Plasma Screens sets the theme for this episode 162. It's March 19th, 2010. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show MediaMonarchy.com. Giving you all the alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups. Remixed for your infotainment. But it's more than that. And I welcome new and returning listeners to the show. Of course, we always record live from the home office of the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, in Southeast Portland, Oregon. Just after 10 a.m., jumped ahead an hour. Some folks do, some folks don't. Wherever you are in the world, however you're listening, again, I welcome you. And I thank our list of affiliates. Simulcasting Live, ZeroPointRadio.com, blasting it out, Casper, Wyoming, 92.3 FM and 1670 AM. Over in Florida, the worldwide home of free speech is RevereRadio.net, 1 p.m. on the East Coast right now. Those are the places you can hear Media Monarchy live. And we thank our friends at Free Radio Olympia, frolympia.org, 98.5 FM in Olympia, Washington. Berkeley, liberationradio.net, 104.1 FM. phantomradio.org, 93.9 in Boulder, Colorado. OneSkyRadio.com on 90.7 FM in Kisilov, Alaska. StickAM.com/Ground Zero Radio on 87.9 in Canton, Georgia. And thanks to Glenn from right here in the People's Republic of Oregon. And CascadiaPublicRadio.org, where he makes a lot of great shows available at a smaller download size, easier to share, easier to attach, and plant seeds. We also thank Jeff at radio23.org for the high-quality feed of Media Monarchy episodes, suitable for rebroadcast. And again, we thank our affiliates. You can make contact with me, Facebook, MySpace, Twitter, YouTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, Archive.org, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword. Recently set up the P.O. Box. I'll remind you about that a couple more times, and then I'll just leave it on the website. P.O. Box 12165. Portland, Oregon, 97212. Send media to the monarchy. You can also send a $10 donation, and you will get Richard Grove's new documentary, 2020 Hindsight. Again, a huge thanks to those who have donated through this Media Monarchy Money March. All the information is available at the top of MediaMonarchy.com. And again, that's how we all share and grow and spread ideas. Get to the story behind the stories. And that's what we're going to try and do for you. We always like to start these shows by looking at the breaking news, complications could drag out health bill votes. We've got all the tabloid stuff, of course. But we also have tensions flare in Hebron, police massing in East Jerusalem. We're going to get more into that later. And we'll, of course, keep Google News open. So if news breaks, we can fix it here on Media Monarchy. I should also tell you, I recorded earlier this morning a B-side episode. And there's also a special gift coming tomorrow on the Equinox. There's a new moon, meaning there's no moon. And that's when bad guys like to do stuff under the cover of dark. But I've got a special podcast gift for you coming up tomorrow. So make sure you're subscribed. feeds.feedburner.com/Media Monarchy. It's all very simple. But I belabor it too much. We have so much to go over, and let's do it. What we're going to start with, by way of WikiLeaks.org, with a scoop on themselves. Classified document shows U.S. intelligence planned to destroy WikiLeaks.org. And we have the document linked up for you, 32-page PDF. Classified U.S. counterintelligence investigation into WikiLeaks. Quote, the possibility that current employees or moles within DOD or elsewhere in the U.S. government are providing sensitive or classified information to WikiLeaks.org cannot be ruled out, end quote. It concocts a plan to fatally marginalize the organization. Since WikiLeaks uses, quote, trust as a center of gravity by protecting the anonymity and identity of the insiders, leakers, or whistleblowers, the identification, exposure, termination of employment, criminal prosecution, legal action against current or former insiders, leakers, or whistleblowers could potentially damage or destroy this center of gravity and deter others considering similar actions from using WikiLeaks.org. End quote. Now, 2 years have actually passed since the date of this report, and with no WikiLeaks.org source exposed, it appears that this plan was ineffective. As an odd justification for the plan, the report claims that, quote, several foreign countries, including China, Israel, North Korea, Russia, Vietnam, and Zimbabwe, have denounced or blocked access to WikiLeaks.org, end quote. The report provides further justification by enumerating embarrassing stories broken by WikiLeaks, such as U.S. equipment expenditure in Iraq, probable U.S. violations of the Chemical Warfare Convention Treaty in Iraq, the battle over the Iraqi town of Fallujah, and human rights violations at Guantanamo Bay. I believe it's also been said that in 3 years, WikiLeaks has scooped more amazing leaked whistleblown news than the Washington Post has in 30. And that's what it's about. We've reported extensively about the death throes of print media. TV's still the king, of course. But internet news is a strong new number two, beating newspapers, and now we see the demonization of the web, saying people are being radicalized by the web. Even though in most of the cases of these large terror busts, they turned out to be low-level morons provocateured into violence by some type of handler from some type of intelligence agency. But that comes out later in the back of papers, if at all. The web is blowing the lid off of all this. We reference many, many times, and again, it's a real thing. It's a big, huge document. Fortunately, a guy named Brent Jessup of Knowledge Driven Revolution did a huge breakdown and analysis on the Department of Defense Information Operations Roadmap, wherein it says they want to, quote, fight the net, as if it were an enemy weapon system. And of course, yes, they essentially created it. I think at the very least, we have to use it all while we can, while we have it, like we do. I streamed a Ken Burns documentary called Empire of the Air about the history of radio, because oftentimes I think if shit hits the fan and things really revert back, it's going to go back to small-time radio to relay information. Or maybe not, and I digress. In this posting about this WikiLeaks document, which again you can download, we have further articles about this by way of InfoWars and Threat Level and Ars Technica. Fight the net. Now, for our next story, we're going to hop over to one of my sister sites, cyberspacewar.com, tracking all the inner space and outer space wars connected to out there, all the way down to our technology that's right here. This story by way of Threat Level. Austin hacker disables more than 100 cars remotely. Bricked them. And now one thing we'll note before we get into this is then I noticed and asked the question, is there a Repo Man meme going around? We're going to get to the story about Lehman Brothers and their repos connected with Geithner later in the show. Those are referred to as repos. We also have the new movie, Repo Men, about stealing your organs back from you if you can't pay for them in the Brave New World Order. And this. More than 100 drivers in Austin, Texas, found their cars disabled or the horns honking out of control after an intruder ran amok in a web-based vehicle immobilization system normally used to get the attention of consumers delinquent on their auto payments. Police with Austin's high-tech crime unit on Wednesday arrested 20-year-old Omar Ramos Lopez, a former Texas Auto Center employee who was laid off last month and allegedly sought revenge by bricking the cars sold from the dealership's four Austin area lots. The dealership used a system called WebTech Plus as an alternative to repossessing vehicles that haven't been paid for. Operated by Cleveland-based Pay Technologies, paytech.cc, the system lets car dealers install a small black box under vehicle dashboards that responds to commands issued through a central website and relayed over a wireless pager network. The dealer can disable a car's ignition system or trigger the horn to begin honking as a reminder that a payment is due. The system will not stop a running vehicle. First rolled out about 10 years ago, remote immobilization systems are a controversial answer to delinquent car payments, with cities voicing concerns that debtors could suffer needless humiliation, or find themselves stranded during an emergency. Proponents say the systems let financiers extend credit to consumers who might otherwise be ineligible for an auto loan. Austin police filed computer intrusion felony charges against Omar Ramos Lopez on Tuesday, the Austin hacker who bricked more than 100 cars.
Former used car lot employee breaks into the company's computer system and disables more than 100 cars. Good evening. I'm Mike Warren.
And I'm Loriana Hernandez. Thanks for joining us. That man is now charged with a felony. First on Fox Night, Carrie Villacosa joining us live from APD headquarters with the very latest. Carrie?
Good evening, Loriana and Mike. And more than 100 reports of disabled vehicles and car horns sounding off uncontrollably. Now, police say it only took a click of a mouse from a former employee still able to access the company's database.
We have a starter kill device on there where we can, and a GPS device where we can know where vehicles are at, because, you know, with us financing the cars, we want, if they're not making their payments, this is a very good tool for us to be able to use.
That's how Texas Auto Center keeps its customers honest. But recently, more than 100 of their drivers complained they couldn't get their cars to start without any explanation.
If we cause them to, you know, lose their job, if we cause them to miss work, if we cause them not be able to pick up their kids, I mean, they're going to be really upset with us. And, you know, all from a, what I feel like someone thought was a harmless prank.
That prank put former employee Omar Ramos Lopez behind bars, charged with felony breach of computer security.
A former employee hacks into a computer system disabling more than 100 customers' cars. The South Austin car dealership says it sent their business into a frenzy as the calls started pouring in from angry customers. This morning, 20-year-old Omar Ramos Lopez was arrested by Austin Police Department's high-tech crime unit. All new at 6, live from Texas Auto Center, KXAN's Carla Castaño joins us with the story she broke on KXAN.com. Carla?
In the last 2 years, all the cars that they've sold here either have these GPS or ignition interlock devices installed in this. A lot of dealerships are doing this nowadays so that if you don't pay, a collector can track the car down and can start it from stopping. But police say this former employee hacked into the system using another employee's password, leaving many of the cars honking uncontrollably and leaving still others completely stalled.
It wouldn't even click over.
Just one of more than 100 frustrated Texas Auto Center customers stuck.
Now, in addition to some of the other contextual supplemental links provided in this story on cyberspacewar.com, we flash back to November 29th, 2005. From USA Today, high-tech repo man keeps car payments coming. Note to repo man, might want to look into another line of work. So that's at least 5 years going back to these remote immobilization systems. And that's what's interesting about the news, and that's why we do this, and that's why we data mine and sift through this all this information, try and connect dots and find stories behind the stories, and this is what we're talking about. It's interesting enough that this guy hacked in and cracked 100 cars, but it ties in with the smart grid, doesn't it? It'll all be connected. We have more from theregister.co.uk, Associated Press, myfoxla.com. So while we're on here, we're going to stay for a little bit on cyberspacewar.com. And I got a list of headlines for you. Cyberpocalypse, command and control. We first note from Reuters, U.S. to roll out major broadband policy. I believe it's broadband.gov. You can go check your speed there now. And on a completely different note from the Economic Times, India Times, Earth under attack from invisible star. This may reference the dark, dangerous asteroids also circling our little rock. Venezuela's Chavez calls for internet controls. That is as well from Reuters. Google 99.9% certain to pull the plug on its China search. Google.cn. That's from theregister.co.uk. We've been tracking the Google-China tensions. The show. But let's hit up something from InfoWorld.com. A story from Dan Tynan, Tech Apocalypse, Five Doomsday Scenarios for IT. As we've noted, and why I was compelled to start CyberspaceWar.com, as we've seen these memes come in over the last year or so, the drumbeat. Tech doomsday scenario number one, America goes dark. Number two, Wall Street gets e-bombed. Like an EMP that we've discussed before and will no doubt discuss again. Number three, Google is gone. Number four, the net goes down. And number five, God strikes back. Roll all those into one for an I-9-11, which again, we tell you time and time again, Professor Lawrence Lessig, as well as former counterterror czar Richard Clark, have said there's an I-Patriot Act sitting on the shelf waiting for such a catastrophic, catalyzing event to be blamed on, we'll see, whomever. More on that in just a few minutes. PayPal says they're sorry to Cryptome. We tracked Cryptome's recent difficulties with the Microsoft takedown. John Young, of course, on record, running the amazing whistleblowing site Cryptome.org. That the internet is essentially a police state surveillance system. PayPal dumped his account, but now they say they're sorry. Again, that connects to alternative media, whistleblowers, WikiLeaks. Iran arrests 30 accused of U.S.-backed cyber war. That's from darkreading.com. The Boogeyman Bomb is an article on foreignpolicy.com by Sharon Weinberger, who is a frequent contributor to Danger Room over on Wired. And what connects into this, what America needs to know about EMPs, electromagnetic pulse. The stories are all so amazing, and I can't do any of them justice, and there's not enough time in the world to try and go into all these again. I just try and lay out the information, lay out the trails, and hopefully people follow them. SEC says hacker manipulated stock prices. That's from Threat Level. And then it gets worse. FBI using phony profiles on social networks to track suspects. Undercover feds on social networking sites raise questions. Your new Facebook friend, the IRS. Those stories coming from USA Today and Tax Prof. Revised cybersecurity bill has been introduced in the Senate. That article's from Computer World, and I believe supposedly they took out the part that says that the Obama-siah can't pull the plug in event of an I-9-11. We'll just see. One in four UK school kids admits hacking. That's from the Register, and I'm not sure what they constitute as hacking. But again, all crime is terror. All guilty until proven innocent. Could terrorists on the net be the next dot-com bubble? That's from Homeland Security Watch. And from DefenseTalk.com. See, in both of those sites and some of the other ones we mentioned, sort of watching the detectives. You got to check out those sites, because they're essentially folks who, like I think I've said before, never met a black op or a war crime they didn't like, and they're pretty much upfront about what they're doing. U.S. Cyber Command preparations underway, General says. And again, that's from DefenseTalk.com. They're amassing troops, literally, for the cyberspace war. As we speak. In an effort to illustrate that point, another one of those kind of sites, DODBuzz.com, Black Cyber Operations on the Rise. Black cyber operations have become all too common. Launching highly sophisticated cyber actions against their targets, they go undetected for months or years. A black operation is generally accepted worldwide by militaries and intel agencies to represent specific types of covert operations, typically involving activities that are either secret or of questionable legitimacy and often violate international law and demand deniability. Russia began developing black cyber op teams as far back as the early 90s, but Russia is not the only military with these capabilities. A Chinese black ops team is credited with the design and execution of the Titan Rain initiative that went long unchecked and undetected deep inside DoD networks. That cyber event is said to be second only to the cyber attack that hit the Pentagon in 08 and impacted both theaters of operation, Afghan-Iraq. So, of course, they say it's all those damn Russians and Chinese. But continuing, these highly specialized teams are rarely talked about in the open media, but sometimes come up in quiet offline conversations at conferences. Recently, at a cyber warfare event, the lunch break conversation turned to cyber weapons. If I were to start a business today, I'd start a black cyber ops and cyber weapons development organization, I told those sitting nearby. Somebody from a three-letter organization leaned over, tapped me on the shoulder, and said, "I'll be your first customer." As the conversation went on, another said, "We need the equivalent of a cyber Blackwater." While there are black cyber ops organizations around the world and cyber arms developers and dealers, this appears to be an underserved market niche. Given the attention cyber warfare is now receiving, you can bet there will be more such organizations going active in the next few years. And as if this article from DODBuzz.com wasn't wearing its fight the net like an enemy weapons system heart on its sleeve, it ends with three facts in bullet points. Fact: black cyber ops are often used for political, military, intelligence, and business reasons. Fact: the only difference between a cyber weapon and a security or capacity testing tool is the intent of the individual using it. Fact: there is a reference to at least one black cyber ops conference that was said to involve the Israeli military and the Mossad. Now, I can't be sure, but as we jump to our next post on cyberspace war from the BBC, another conference is referenced. Was it the same cyber terror conference? Cyber Terrorism 2010, I believe. Meet U.S. Cybercom. Why the U.S. is fielding a cyber army. Again, from the Big Brother Corporation, the BBC. The U.S. is in the process of creating a unified cyber command to fight the wars of the future. The Pentagon has no doubt that the next conventional war will include a cyber element. Looking out of a window in London's Canary Wharf, Daniel Kuehl, K-U-E-H-L, gestures randomly toward a high-rise. Let's just assume that somewhere in that building there are a bunch of cyber systems, networks, routers that are militarily important to take out, he said. Which would you think would be the better way of doing it in terms of this neighborhood? To make it stop working through a bunch of keystrokes? Or to put a laser-guided 1,000-pound weapon through the third floor and blow it to shreds? We're really good at that second operation, but there might be some advantages to doing it the first way. The Pentagon is creating its first fully-fledged cyber command, U.S. Cybercom, to improve its ability to wage war with keystrokes. Jumping down,
Not everyone is convinced of U.S. Cybercom's military value. One U.S. official at the London conference said that if cyber warfare was a WMD, it was a weapon of mass disruption. But the U.S. Senate is expected to confirm Lieutenant General Keith Alexander, who also heads the U.S. National Security Agency, NSA, as head of U.S. Cybercom in the near future. If this happens, when this happens, he will rise to the rank of a four-star general. Going back to Daniel Kuhl saying, quote, "Believe me, creating an organization led by an officer of that rank is not easy. It's not simple, and it's not done unless they are perceived to be very, very pressing reasons for doing so. We are deadly serious about this." Now, in a way to further break this down, but also to wrap it up and connect it to some of the things we've mentioned now, our third and final post on cyberspacewar.com, virtual flag terrorism is the next threat. Virtual flag terrorism being a play on false flag terrorism. Like when you hit your own gang, or when you fly the flag of your enemy to pull off an attack to be blamed upon them. It's happened all throughout history. It happens again and again. And yet when it's happened on a massive, truly massive scale in front of all our eyes, we miss it. Are we going to miss it again? A new article and video from author, historian, Webster Tarpley, tarpley.net, an expert at breaking down the rogue networks of the intelligence agencies and the patsies and the moles and the double and triple agents. U.S. readies cyber war and virtual flag terrorism. So again, this full clip is from Russia Today, where, again, folks like Webster Tarpley and Wayne Mattson and Gerald Celente, Max Kaiser, get a lot of time on Russia Today. Could it be because they want to use these quote-unquote conspiracy guys to further undermine the West? That's a conspiracy for another time. Virtual flag terrorism is the next threat.
Well, it's like a real-life Matrix. Cyber wars and cybersecurity are no longer fictional plots for movies. They are serious concerns getting tracked by politicians in Washington. Joining me now to shed light on these cyber wars is investigative journalist and author Webster Tarpley. Webster, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you.
First of all, I want to talk about Google and China. We were discussing it with our correspondent, Lauren Lister, before. You know, Google said that it would stay in China only if the Chinese government lifted the censorship issue. But, you know, nothing has changed. Google is still there. What's really going on here?
We have to admire the virtuosity of House Foreign Relations Committee under Howie Berman, because last week they were able to decide an issue in the history of the Ottoman Empire, and this week they're back legislating the proper internet policy for China. I think it's clear Google will have to obey Chinese law or they'll be out. Microsoft is already signaling that they are much more anxious to stay than Google. And when we say Google, we should realize that they're now in a cartel with the National Security Agency, the NSA, and therefore are functioning as an arm of the U.S. intelligence community. The U.S. is trying to go to the WTO, the World Trade Organization, with a complaint against China. So I think there's nothing coming there but conflict. But there are two sides to Google. One is the censorship issue. The other side is the hacking, the cyber warfare, as you point out. And I think here is where we have some really ominous stuff going on. Here in the U.S., we've had a buildup now over months, going back to a statement by Obama last May, where he said that his website had been hacked during the campaign. So he was a victim of these things. So there's been a buildup on it. And recently, we've had a special report on CNN, a simulation of a cyber attack on the U.S. And we've had a very important op-ed in the Washington Post by a guy called Mike McConnell, who was the head of the NSA under Clinton, and he now works for Booz Allen Hamilton. And essentially, what you have in this is everything is shut down when the cyber attack occurs, and Admiral McConnell says, we've got to fight the cyber war the way we fought the Cold War. So let me just, if I could, point out a couple of tendencies that are going on.
One of the things that's happening here is a vast exaggeration of what you can do with a computer, right? It seems to be they want you to believe you can shut down power plants, you can blow up nuclear reactors, you can stop trains and planes from taking off. There are no really recorded cases of this. You have people hacking into banks and things like this, but not anything more. It's the CIA and the Wall Street Journal that want you to think that there are these threats. So it sounds a little bit like Saddam can strike London in 45 minutes or something like that. The other thing we're doing is taking the language and the logic of the Cold War and indeed of nuclear confrontation and bringing that into this new cyber field. So we're talking about deterrence, retaliation, first strike, all of this this stuff that we thought we were rid of.
So why then would there be this exaggeration? You know, in the recent article that I pointed out just a few minutes ago in the London Times, NATO diplomats were saying there is a cyber war going on between China and the United States. And you seem to say that maybe this is just the ongoing finger pointing that's happening between China and the U.S. I mean, what's really happening here?
It's something more. It's much more ominous because it's the preparation for a whole new field of conflict on the part of people whose interest is conflict. They make money off of it. They've made their careers off of it. It also is their ideology. With cyber warfare, you get a whole new cast of enemies. In the CNN simulation, Bin Laden, Al-Qaeda came up, and they were essentially scorned. They said, oh, they can't do it. Those guys live in caves. So who can do it? CNN says Russia, China, Sudan. So now you're playing in a much bigger league than just the Middle East. The other thing is, suppose you have a digital Pearl Harbor or 9/11 or something that's being sold as that. I think you get into an issue which I would call virtual flag terrorism. In other words, false flag terrorism, provocations take place, they're blamed on somebody. In the area of virtual flag terrorism, something happens. You can blame anything on anybody. If we have a crash in the D.C. Metro, what to do? Blame a hacker in Russia or China or Sudan. And who in the world is going to be able to say no? Especially when we have these groups like NetWitness, which seems to be the watchdog of this, which is itself an arm of the CIA and the U.S. intelligence community. So it looks to me like we're heading into an area. Plus, you can also put provocateurs on somebody's territory. I mean, physical provocateurs, and they do it. Or you have a botnet. You have Trojans that are controlling computers in some other country, and you blame them. So location and attribution are not the same thing. But right. Some people would say, no, location is attribution. We make no distinction. Let's attack.
Webster, I want to thank you so much for joining me. And we're certainly venturing into different turf now with these cyber war attacks.
Virtual flag terrorism. So hopefully, in going through cyberspacewar.com, and again, those headlines and all those things are available there. Of provocations and these events that we hear blamed on someone or a nation. All wars based on deception, Sun Tzu said. So as we jump back to MediaMonarchy.com, something that has always fascinated the hell out of me and also scared the hell out of me is this idea of a fake event. And some of the things we've gone into in the past on MediaMonarchy.com concern an Orson Welles War of the Worlds type event. That, of course, was our opening quote on this episode. We annihilated the world before your very ears. Orson Welles' outro narration from that broadcast. But let's just get into it. From Reuters. Fake report of Russian tanks sparks panic in the country of Georgia. Panic gripped Georgia last Saturday when a pro-government television station broadcast a fake report that Russian tanks had entered the capital and President Mikhail Saakashvili had been killed. IMEDI TV, IMEDI, introduced the report as an imitation of possible events, quote-unquote, but the warning was lost on many viewers as mobile phone networks crashed and residents of Tbilisi rushed into the streets. There you see the communications networks crashing just in this kind of event. The report thrust the ex-Soviet neighbors back to August 2008, 888, if you recall, with the Olympics and that logo that looks like an 888. And the U.S. attacking Russia through its proxy state, Georgia. The report thrusts the ex-Soviet neighbors back to August 2008 when Russia crushed an assault by U.S. ally Georgia on the rebel region of South Ossetia in a five-day war and sent tanks to within 28 miles of Tbilisi. The Georgian Interior Minister said the report, which did not carry a banner saying it was a hoax, caused great panic. A cinema in Tbilisi emptied as parents called for their children home, a frantic filmgoer said. Russian Interfax news agency flashed the report on the alleged but unconfirmed entry of Russian tanks and death of Saakashvili, and Moscow's Eki Moskvi radio station interrupted its regular programming with the news. Using archived pictures from the 2008 war, Ameti showed advancing Russian tanks. Switching to a live talk show, the anchor apologized for any panic the report had caused, saying, "We just wanted to show you what the worst day in Georgian history might look like." The report was a barely disguised swipe at opponents of Saakashvili, who recently met Russian Prime Minister Vladimir Putin in Moscow and called for the countries to restore ties. Gregory Alverlads, head of the Georgia Media Production Holding, which owns Ameti, told Reuters the aim was to show the real threat of how events might unfold. Dozens of angry Georgians converged on Ameti, where opposition politician Nino Bergenadze told the reporters the stunt was disgusting.
"Your main news channel said your country's been invaded and your president murdered. You'd no doubt be extremely scared. Well, in Georgia, that is exactly what has just happened. And what's worse is that the TV station only gave a brief warning that the Russian attack was a hoax before frightening its primetime viewers for a good 30 minutes. Well, RT's Georgia correspondent, Irina Galushko, who's here in Moscow at the moment, can tell us more here in the studio. Irina, extraordinary story. So, what did they show exactly?"
"Well, basically, one of the main TV channels, like you said, Ameti, has shown just a hodgepodge of pictures of archive pictures that were taken from the last probably 10 years. And it made it look like the entire country was in upheaval. You can see it on your screens right now. So there's the program. By the way, this was a pilot of a new TV show on the Ameti. And that was certainly a great way to kickstart their first day on air with a scandalous report basically showing tanks and saying that about 4 people were killed, about 9 wounded when Russia attacked some of Georgian towns, Tsin Valley and Tkheta. Again, these are just pictures that technically have been taken throughout the last 10 years. They're not recent pictures, but it doesn't say so anywhere on the screen, of
course. Sure, so the viewer is unlikely to know that. So what has been the reaction to all of this?"
"Well, the reaction has been panic, of course. It's been a pandemonium. I just called some of my friends and my producer in Georgia, and I couldn't reach them for a while because everybody that was watching this program, they obviously have reacted to it. The thing is, they have said that this was just a scenario in the beginning. So if you tuned in the middle of the program, and you know afterwards, after seeing this, went running somewhere to warn your relatives, you didn't see the end, which said again that this was just an example of what might have happened. So people started calling their relatives. The phone lines were shut off. People started gathering up and taking off, leaving Tbilisi because they were in panic. They thought war has started, and they had to leave. Basically, just a total pandemonium. And of course, people are not happy about this. And we do have reports right now that a lot of the people who did see this are going to stage protests in front of the parliament building at the soonest convenience, apparently, because this was something that is absolutely outrageous. You just cannot go and scare people like that with a report without making it plainly obvious that this is not real. This is not happening."
"But any explanation from the TV station exactly why they did it in this way?"
"I think the TV station is going to take their sweet time in trying to explain why they did it, but I can venture a guess and say why this is actually happening in Georgia, because President Saakashvili is obsessed with this idea that Russia is the main enemy, and Russians are totally set on invading Georgia at their earliest convenience."
"Of course, what happened in 2008 is very much on people's minds,
isn't
it?"
"Absolutely, so they're still living in fear, and he's essentially banking on that fear and knowing that people are scared, that the last thing in the world they want is war. So he's constantly actually going on there, doing everything to tell people that this danger basically exists. Yes, thank you. And people are listening, and when things like this happen, and like this is actually what happened on August 2008, when things like this happen, when they see these pictures, they do believe this.
But just finally, will somebody be brought to account for this? The fact that people are protesting now and really very angry, will somebody be brought to account?
I seriously doubt it. It's a pretty wide-known fact that most of Georgian TV channels, and including Emedi, which is one of the top three channels, are under strict government control. So basically, they say everything that Saakashvili wants them to say. So, of course, no one's going to carry any responsibility for this.
Predictive programming out of Georgia. And again, there's, I believe, linked up for you, there's a CNN international clip where the reporter does mention Orson Welles' War of the Worlds. But then just a couple of days after that, and this coming from timesonline.co.uk, French state railway causes panic with web blunder over disaster. And more to the point, from irishtimes.com, French rail disaster was part of training exercise. People logging on to the website of the SNCF, the French state railway, got a shock on the morning of March 17th. It announced that an explosion had torn through a high-speed express in Burgundy, killing more than 100 people and injuring nearly 400. For more than 40 minutes, panicked members of the public called the disaster helpline that accompanied the announcement, and word of the catastrophe flashed around Twitter and other social networks. Then, the SNCF realized that an internal disaster exercise had reached the public site. Embarrassed managers were at a loss to explain how the drill in public information had gone live. Quote, "We often carry out crisis exercises and send information messages to the public and press communiques. There was an error today, which meant that message ended up on SNCF.com," end quote, from a spokeswoman. The announcement, which appeared at 11 a.m. on March 17th, said that normal service on the site had been interrupted because of a dramatic event. Quote, "An explosion of unknown origin occurred today at about 8 a.m. on TGV high-speed train near Macon. The first estimates from the emergency services report 102 deaths and 380 injured. All victims have been evacuated to hospitals at Macon. My 2 years of French doesn't help me. But jokes aside, they're drills. So whether that was a predictive programming TV show or a drill that accidentally went live about mass transit in France, these drills in the predictive programming media is acclimating us for these events to really take place. So both those stories about the fake news on Georgia TV and the fake disaster on the French Metro, those both link back and forth to each other. And we covered the fake Georgia news on the most recent episode of The New World Next Week, my weekly 10-minute video series with James Corbett of CorbettReport.com. And we reference in there, and the flashbacks are there for you, on MediaMonarchy.com when we went over in 2008, the 70th anniversary of War of the Worlds, PSYOP. And we asked the question, sequel soon. There's another post called Project Bluebeam, TV Fakery, Holographic Projections, and Audio Spotlights. Both of those posts are well-sourced and lay out all the techniques and the possibilities for a fake event, a War of the Worlds fake rapture-type event. And again, I don't have time to dive into all of this right now. I would just implore you to go check out those links in the flashbacks and some of the videos related to holographic projections in the skies. You could project whatever deity over whatever land believes in that deity to cause them to lay down their arms. It could be anything. Wag the dog. So ultimately, this all, of course, leads back to the events of 9/11. I was a radio programmer when that happened, living in West Virginia. Post 9/11, I started to investigate all of the alternative news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups that brought me to you here, now, in Portland, Oregon, 2010. And we've noted recently the seamless transition between the previous puppet administration and the current. All handed off with the bailout bills. But the ghosts from previous puppet administrations always seem to haunt us. Because if we don't know the answers, how can we go on? How can we keep building on a foundation of lies? Or, like Jim Garrison said, let justice be done though the heaven falls. From Raw Story, Bush administration officials warned the 9/11 Commission about a line it should not cross. Senior Bush administration officials sternly cautioned the 9/11 Commission against probing too deeply into the terrorist attacks of 9/11, according to a document recently obtained by the ACLU. The notification came in a letter dated January 6, 2004, addressed by Attorney General John Ashcroft, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld, and CIA Director George Tenet. We have the PDF link for you to download that. It's a 2 meg. That's, again, what we try and do for you on MediaMonarchy.com, is give you that extra information. The ACLU described it as a fax sent by David Addington, then counsel to former Vice President Darth Cheney. In the message, the officials denied the bipartisan commission's request to question terrorist detainees, informing its two senior-most members that doing so would cross a line and obstruct the administration's ability to protect the nation. Quote, in response to the commission's expansive request for access to secrets, the executive branch has provided such access in full cooperation. There is, however, a line that the commission should not cross. The line separating the commission's proper inquiry into the September 11, 2001 attacks from interference with the government's ability to safeguard the national security, including protection of Americans from future terrorist attacks. That little exchange and quote is on page 26. Of this document, which again, all linked up for you here, ACLU, rawstory.com, empty wheel. The commission was a cover-up. So when people still defend the official story of 9/11, they always go to the commission. They were set up to fail by their own admissions. Posted up below this story about senior Bushy criminals warning the 9/11 Commission about a line it should not cross, we have some other updates. We mentioned last week the smear on Yukihisa Fujita's 9/11 truth stance, Japanese parliament member. The Washington Post actually published Fujita's rebuttal letter, and that is linked up for you on WashingtonPost.com. It was, of course, filled with the usual ad hominem name-calling attacks. Never based on any of the facts and informations brought up. Rahm Emanuel helped GOP sink 9/11 trial. This from ConsortiumNews.com. White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel collaborated behind the scenes with Republican Senator Lindsey Graham to oppose the Obama administration's plans to use federal civilian courts, not military commissions, to try alleged Islamic terrorists, according to sources and press reports. Rahm Emanuel, of course, the shady, scary character that is the chief of staff to the Obamasiah, of course, his brother, high-rolling Hollywood agent Ari Emanuel, parodied in Entourage. Yeah, it's all so funny. A flashback from HistoryCommons.org to summer of 2001, where the FAA participated in an exercise based around the hijacking of a Boeing 767. The FAA takes part in a training exercise based around the hijacking of a Boeing 767, the same kind of aircraft used that hit the Twin Towers on 9/11. The exercise conducted as part of efforts to update the strategy for dealing with hijackings. Its participants include the FAA, the FBI's Miami Field Office, Miami-Dade County Police Department, SWAT team, on and on and on. The drills of the exact same things happening just by coincidence. Colleen Rowley, 9/11 whistleblower, Time Magazine Person of the Year. Of course, now as we see whistleblowers and their protections under attack, there was a recent conference called the Treason in America Conference. There's a whole host of video from all of that. I don't have it linked up. Go to 911blogger.com to get it. But Colleen Rowley also did an interview with antiwar.com, which in the past has never really shown a whole hell of a lot of love to 9/11 truth. But I think you'll see folks coming back around to it as they realize the Changeluyah ain't going to get them into heaven. Attorney General Eric Holder notes, Osama never to be caught alive. That doesn't mean they're going to stop looking for this corpse, Emmanuel Goldstein. April Gallup's case on 9/11 Pentagon thrown out. April Gallup, Pentagon employee. Basically, her story is and was that there seemed to be something in the Pentagon that blew up. Court cases, interviews, depositions. April Gallup, G-A-L-L-O-P. We've covered her story a little bit before in the past. A piece from BigEye.com, the 9/11 cat's out of the bag. An interesting one from Wayne Mattson, OnlineJournal.com, with a question perhaps about a full El Al, that's Israeli flight, also taking off on 9/11 from JFK to Tel Aviv. We, of course, know about all the bin Ladens that were ferried out. Even limited hangout 9/11 investigations will admit the flights. And our last 9/11 update note, again, from HistoryCommons.org and their invaluable, fantastic, complete 9/11 timeline. They have some of their most recent updates as of March 16th, going over more war games, Blackwater, and KSM. You know, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, the man that was waterboarded hundreds of times, his kids tortured in front of him. He claimed he blew up things that didn't exist. And this is the supposed mastermind, A to Z, mastermind of 9/11. 9/11 truth isn't going to go away. And fortunately, there are moves now, as we've seen with Colleen Rowley and antiwar.com and the Treason in America Conference and Cindy Sheehan, the peace movement and the 9/11 truth movement. We have so much more to get into on this episode 162 of MediaMonarchy.com. We're going to take a quick break with Tom Paxton in the news.
I got news of the very best kind about troubles that have fallen behind, about people that used to be blind till they open up their eyes to see. It's news when they begin to ask why they're poor, until the day that they die they're tired of pie in the sky and they want some security. And that's news, news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. That's news, news, you talk about the news, that's mighty good news to me. I got news about some ordinary men, they heard it preached time and again to be patient and grateful, amen, and don't agitate around here. They argued and they talked it around and they woke up, and here's what they found, their voices made a mighty big sound till they didn't know the meaning of fear. And that's news, news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. News, news, you talk about the news, that's mighty good news to me. In the hazard, they're meeting that night organizing and doing it right and planning for a hell of a fight, and they sure don't aim to lose. In New York, the tenants that know the slumlord ain't getting our dough, they're fed up. And I want you to know that's the very best kind of news. And that's news, news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. News, news, you talk about the news, that's mighty good news to me. And that's news, news, ain't that news, ain't that something to see. That's news, news, you talk about the news, that's mighty good news to me.
Ain't that news? Tom Paxton and the Broadside Singers. We are now well into hour number two of episode 162 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster and DJ and all-around media maven behind MediaMonarchy.com, CyberspaceWar.com, and FoodWorldOrder.com. It's March 19th, 2010, the day before the spring equinox. And we're broadcasting live on the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, and revereradio.net. And again, thanks to the affiliates who help spread the word and rebroadcast Media Monarchy, frolympia.org, berkeleyliberationradio.net, phantomradio.org, oneskyradio.com, stickam.com/groundzeroradio, cascadiapublicradio.org, and radio23.org. So we ended last hour on 9/11, another cover-up, an official story crumbling by the days and weeks and years. And I'll just remind you, we referenced Jim Garrison earlier. The American public didn't see the Zapruder film until 1975. 12 years after the assassination of JFK. We're coming up on the 9th anniversary of 9/11 later this year, and I've often speculated perhaps we haven't seen our Zapruder film. But now we have a few topics on MediaMonarchy.com from a guy we featured many, many times before. Always has something interesting to say. He is a former CIA operative, so we must do the data mining. Investigate. Not sure what's true, what's a cover. He has also said all the evidence, of course, points to inside job on 9/11. He was the basis of Syriana. Former CIA operative Bob Baer, B-A-E-R, on a recent appearance on CNN, pointed out that the CIA has become an adjunct to the military. Basically, not going quite as far as Dr. Ron Paul did recently, saying that essentially the CIA has pulled off a coup over the military in this country. But this will tie us into, as we get into the grand chessboard, the geopolitical scene. the CIA as an adjunct to the United States military.
Well, does the CIA need an overhaul? A lot of experts believe the agency is badly in need of reform in the wake of a deadly December suicide attack against one of its bases in Afghanistan.
Yeah, our next guest has pieced together a chilling account of that suicide attack, and he also has a lot to say about some missteps that preceded it. Joining me now and joining us now to break it all down is former CIA operative and GQ contributor Bob Baer. Great to talk to you this morning.
Morning.
It's interesting because you wrote a fascinating article, but in an op-ed in January, CIA Director Leon Panetta defended what happened, and he said, "We have no consolation in public commentary suggesting that those who gave their lives somehow brought it upon themselves because of, quote, poor tradecraft. It's like saying Marines who die in a firefight brought it upon themselves because they have poor warfighting skills." But in your article, you say, indeed, it was poor tradecraft. Explain.
Well, it was more than that. It was inexperience. I mean, the CIA puts people through a course that's basically a week. It's a PowerPoint presentation on suicide vests. As you know, these seven people died when this mole, this kind of mole, came into the base, blew himself up. Everybody was standing around. It was clear that the people standing around didn't understand the threat that was posed to them. They didn't. He should have been searched before he got inside this base in Afghanistan. He should have been run through a metal detector. It should have been a one-on-one meeting. That's the protocol for the CIA. So all these protocols were broken. Unfortunately, the chief of base there did not have the training nor experience to run that base. And the reason is really not the CIA's fault. It's the war on terror. 9 years now, we've worn the CIA down to a nub. The training cycles have been broken. They've got about 200 or 300 people that rotate in and out of Baghdad, out of Kabul. We're just not having the experienced officers out there. It's broken.
But what sort of training did this person have, and what sort of training should they have had?
Well, when I went through, we had 3 or 4 months of explosives training, where we actually made bombs. We blew up cars. We worked on detonators, things like that. You learned enough to be scared of explosives, enough not to have let a guy like this in.
And much was made about the fact that it was a sign of respect, that it was showing that they trusted this person, that they trusted the Jordanian intelligence as well, because that's who found them and brought them to that base. A lot of us were scratching our heads saying, how could this guy just walk into a forward operating base, walk in? What should have happened in that situation? And in that situation, were rules broken because they were trying to get this information?
Well, one, to answer one of your questions, they outsource intelligence to the Jordanians, right, or anybody, even to Blackwater, they outsource intelligence, as we know now. So the CIA officers are not actually in touch with these people initially to vet them. So if the Jordanians say the guy's good, he must be good. The whole idea of having 13 people outside waiting for the guy, as I said, breaks protocol completely. You know, the way it should have worked was that one officer should have gone out in a car to meet this guy, and we today would be talking about the death of one officer rather than seven.
Outsourcing intelligence. And of course, violating standard operating procedure, which, as Fletcher Prouty, who is depicted as Mr. X in the film JFK, but Fletcher Prouty, Prouty.org, said the only thing you really need to make sure is that the usual protections that are in place are removed. So when things like this happen, they're compartmentalized. So if we go from Bob Baer and outsourced intelligence and the criminals in action, the cocaine importation agency, leads us right into private contractors tied to effort to track and kill militants. This coming from Danger Room. Did a Pentagon official set up his own rogue intelligence operation in Afghanistan? And did he divert cash from an open-source cultural research program to do it? Well, foundation funds. The top national security story coming from the New York Times just a couple of days ago, Tuesday, March 16th, raised more questions than answers. In the short version, Dexter Filkins and Mark Mazzetti of the New York Times tell the story of Michael Furlong, a defense official reporting to U.S. Strategic Command, STRATCOM, who may have hired private security contractors to serve as his own personal Jason Bournes to collect targeting intelligence in Afghanistan and Pakistan. And in a particularly interesting twist, he may have used money intended for a military-funded news-gathering operation as his own private slush fund. The whole scheme apparently irritated the CIA and may have crossed the line into contract fraud if the Times account is correct. But it also sheds light on some lesser-known players like International Media Ventures, a strategic communications firm that seems to straddle the line between public relations, propaganda work, and private security contracting. Security communications firms have flourished in the strange new post-9/11 media environment. And of course, they just mention Jason Bourne from the Robert Ludlum novels and the Matt Damon movies. See, and again, our movies all show us rogue intelligence agencies. But that doesn't happen in real life. More information linked up there, of course. Always giving you extra links, trying to back up stories with other sources. So we have a few War Horse updates posted up below this. Private contractors posting. Truthistreason.net notes, oil? We're here for the heroin! We've already discussed that. Gold, oil, and drugs. Money laundering. The banksters. Wars. At $19.9 million a barrel, heroin's your much better racket. And speaking of racket, from Existentialist Cowboy, they note that the war on terrorism is a racket. Paraphrasing Smedley Butler's classic pamphlet, War is a Racket. He detailed the plot, the FDR plot. HenryMacow.com has an article asking the question, would U.S. troops fire on Americans? We've often speculated that that's why we see international military agencies all mixing in with each other. But the assumption that it may be easier to shoot someone that's not your skin color or not from your neighborhood. We've seen situations like Katrina with basically the crackdown and the gun grab, martial law kind of situation, where they've said on camera in that ABC News report, the classic report, where they're banging down doors to try and take guns. You don't want to think about it. Indonesian police and military conducting massive joint anti-terror drills. More on that from philstar.com. There is a clip as well as an article from CCTV, english.cctv.com. U.S. Marines using live fire during their military exercises with South Korea. Drills, terror drills, war games, roll on. Our last note here on War Horse from allgov.com. Pentagon propaganda machine rolls on in Afghanistan. Which could be anything, as that story illustrated. Connections with PR firms. Or are they just CIA cutouts all along? Fronts. Maybe they know it, maybe they don't. So now as we get into the geopolitics. Broken glass and ominous signs. Ominous signs plague Biden's Middle East visit. We've gotten reports from Reuters, as well as other blogs and Raw Story and more on what increasingly looks like a deteriorating situation. In the region where symbolism may matter most, the signs for U.S. Vice President Joe Biden's visit were inauspicious. First, Egyptian President Hosni Mubarak canceled talks in Cairo and flew to the hospital for gallbladder surgery. Then came an Israeli gift of broken glass and an eerie power outage in the Hall of Remembrance. By the time the lights flickered back on, Biden's Middle East fortunes were sealed with an Israeli announcement that it would build 1,600 new homes for Jewish settlers, ignoring U.S. and Palestinian objections, probably not to mention most of the rest of the other world. The broken glass. Netanyahu was giving Biden a plaque about planting a tree for Biden's mother. And he leaned on it and broke the glass. And Netanyahu said, quote, "I have one thing to offer you right now, and it's broken glass." Riots erupt across Jerusalem as Hamas leader calls for renewed intifada. That's coming from Raw Story. Palestinians have day of rage as Israel becomes more isolated. That's from NewsJunkiePost.com. JewishAgency.org references the broken glass, but the connections here, where Biden declares, quote, "I also see myself as a Zionist." Politico.com broke down the fascinating display on, I think, Rick Sanchez on CNN, where they're including his Twitter feed live along the bottom. Which, if you recall our story from a couple of months ago about a news station that did that with a billboard, you may want to have a 7-second delay. They ran their Twitter crawler, and it was nothing but not anti-Israel. It's not about that. But they were all highly critical, like Jewish lobby runs America. These were the messages flashing by. And again, if we're dealing with a public that are going to fall victim to the media events, the fake news that we were just discussing. In an era of more media, I sometimes think I make the false assumption that that makes people more media literate. And unfortunately, that's not the case now. So I'm sure people tuning in, seeing the Twitter crawler saying Jewish lobby runs America, they're thinking, wow, is this coming from the CNN feed? Hundreds of bunker busters shipped to the Diego Garcia U.S. military outpost island country state. Final destination, Iran? That question coming from HaroldScotland.com. Analysts say U.S. may be seeking Israeli regime change. That is coming from Raw Story, as again, things ratchet up. I believe I glanced and saw on Google News this morning, I'm not sure if it's up there floating around on the top page or not, about Obama to meet with Netanyahu, I suppose, as things break down and get worse in our seemingly suicide pact. Paul Joseph Watson says a false flag terror attack would, of course, have to precede the invasion of Iran. Again, all war based on deception. They'll need some type of catalyzing, catastrophic event to kickstart it. Another amazing clip of the grand old lady of the White House press pool, Helen Thomas. And we're going to listen to this clip, but you should also check out the video, and you can see the press secretary wearing a USA jersey while he's giving his press conference speech. So he's got the USA jersey and the American flag in the background, and it's just too ridiculous. But again, seemingly the only one who asks pertinent questions, asking the question, how can the U.S. support Israel when it continues to violate international law?
Yes, ma'am.
I'm sure the president is aware that it's against international law to annex occupied land. Why do we keep giving, as Vice President Biden did, ironclad commitments to Israel when it violates international law? And the president says that our relationship is unshakable. How can that be?
Well, we enjoy a strong and important relationship with the country and the people of Israel. And we are...
Even when it violates the law, I mean, you go into this whole thing, why should they be get this reprieve?
Well, again, we enjoy a strong relationship with the country and the people. We are committed to their security in a very important and dangerous. Well, let me finish my answer. In a very important region of the world, I think the vice president though could not have been clearer on, as I said, and as the vice president said, on the both the timing and the substance of the announcement that was made during his trip, that we have asked each side to refrain from the type of announcements that would shake the trust needed to sit down together and make make some decisions on moving forward on a peace process. So I think the vice president was extremely clear on his trip there. I know the president looks forward to speaking with the vice president. He'll get back very, very early tomorrow morning, and I anticipate that they'll likely talk either later in the weekend or first thing on Monday about what the vice president saw, not just in Israel but in the region, as we try to move things forward.
Well, we've already seen the violation on the part of one party. What is the U.S. going to do about it?
Well, again, I think that the vice president was extremely strong in condemning what the Israeli government announced during his trip. Chip?
You said that the president is feeling some momentum on health care.
Oh, yeah, we're going to have to move on. Tensions flare in Hebron, police mass in East Jerusalem. That's the headline on Google News right now. One last note. Israeli spy planes over Budapest after the mysterious assassination of a Syrian national in his car in Budapest. That comes from YNetNews.com out of Israel. The last geopolitical note comes back to our neighbors to the south. Hit teams attack U.S. consular staff and families in Mexico. This going back 5 days now. Suspected drug cartel hit teams gunned down an American consular employee and her husband in a Mexican border city and killed a co-worker's Mexican husband in a separate attack. Drug violence. Quickly now, we're going to go over mystery memes and mayhem, occult origins, some of the latest headlines under history, mystery, and media memes, and the murder and mayhem, all the things that we track on MediaMonarchy.com. Again, the site and the show is the most info-packed site and show I think you're going to find. And if you enjoy it, please spread the word about MediaMonarchy.com. But our first note comes from News Junkie Post. 40,000-year-old Australian archaeology site reignites origin debate. On a different note, the top 10 conservative sex scandals through the years. German intelligence agency fights to keep Nazi files secret after 50 years. That's from allgov.com. Foreignpolicy.com has an interesting article on the history of the honey trap. Basically, the honey trap being the pretty woman who lulls you in to do you in. Or just your secrets. Downing Street defends Omag bomb intelligence move. That's from the BBC, and that's a bit of a flashback. I believe going back to 98. AllGov.com also has the oldest unanswered Freedom of Information Act requests, and there's some interesting PDFs in there for you. Again, my recent interview with the editor-in-chief of AllGov.com, David Walachinsky, is up in the podcast archives. And our last note, FBI forensic analysts under investigation for falsifying tests. I know this connects in the story of some guy who did 28 years for some rape or murder he didn't even commit. Feds falsifying tests. But on the media memes notes, even though those things are replete throughout this show, VigilantCitizen.com is a great site that breaks down all the occult symbolism and connections in pop culture media. Now, whether that's cartoons or MTV Video Awards, or in this current case, it's all amazing, and it looks like his site is blowing up. I contacted VigilantCitizen.com for an interview months ago. Now I haven't gotten anything back, because I notice, even on this latest story we're about to mention, there's some 680 comments. Because when you start talking about Beyonce, or Rihanna, or Lil Jon, or Lady Gaga, you're going to get mad traffic. More so than I'm getting with Bob Baer and CNN clips. The hidden meaning of Lady Gaga's latest video, Telephone. VigilantCitizen.com goes into all the amazing occult symbolism that ties in with media, mind control. On a purely pop note from the Christian Science Monitor, ABBA, Genesis, and Iggy Pop entering the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Much more important, however, from BlacklistedNews.com and Crikey, a new investigation from publication Crikey.org. Study finds 55% of newspaper stories are placed. That's just another example of fake news. Cracked, you know the magazine, Cracked.com? There's an interesting blog post, 5 Ways Video Games Are Trying to Get You Addicted. And we also know it with the trailer embedded, Invisible Empire, the new documentary from Jason Burmes, radio host, documentary, video maker behind Fabled Enemies and the original Loose Change films, now has Invisible Empire. All conspiracy, no theory, all in their own words. And again, these people that we track, they do have names and addresses a lot of times. And they've written down their plans, but they know, like Alan Dulles said in referring to the Warren Commission report, that America doesn't read. The last few frightening notes on this post on the murder and mayhem, the mass murder contagion that we've been tracking. Of course, we just had the Ides of March, and we're coming up very soon to the month of April, which always seems to have the preponderance of the clusters of the mass shooter events that we've gone over in the past. Columbine, Virginia Tech, Waco, on and on. But some of the recent situations, the Pentagon shooter, John Patrick Bedell, the guy who has said he was a crazy 9/11 conspiracy theorist, trying to, again, conflate and smear everybody together. Of course, he was also radicalized by the evil, dirty internet. But there was also a Las Vegas courtroom shooting recently. Both of those guns have been tracked back to the Tennessee Police Department. Now, they can sell this story by saying, well, different police departments do different things with guns that they confiscate or collect or whatever. Some of them destroy them, and some of them turn around and sell them. It's just interesting that the same guns, or rather, the guns from the same place used in high-profile, big media coverage murder and mayhem events came from the same place. More on this story from InfoWars and the Associated Press. From the Times Online, New Jersey doomsday man raped his 5 daughters to save his bloodline. Which is much worse than the last one from NationalTerrorAlert.com. Seattle man claiming to be vampire prompts bomb scare. I've been in Portland for nearly 4 years. My first city. I'm a small town guy, but I've always loved the media, so I kind of grew beyond my small town upbringing. with books and films and records. And now this massive connection here to you. I worry that people are going to start falling apart. And that's, again, why we see these movies like The Crazies and all that, the predictive programming. But demonizing some of these strange events now, Joe Stack or Bedell or Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter, all of these events, the underwear bomber, that all have bizarre intelligence agency connections, all of them. They're demonizing this now, so later, if things continue to fall apart at the pace that they're going, you're going to have regular people going nuts. Let's shift gears and keep going. I'll stop leaning back in my chair and rambling. It's on to the Obama side. Change, hallelujah, my friends. Oversight, corporate coffee, and courage lost. This is just going to be a fast blast of headlines. We still have amazingly important news to go over, as all of this is. We could do whole episodes on just a few of these headlines. Obama fights against congressional oversight of spy agencies. Again, from allgov.com. Obama agencies invoking secrecy provisions more often than under Bush. That is from Raw Story. We noted last week, I believe, the coffee party, of course, set up by an Obama campaign online Twitter tube operative. The Obamanoid coffee party events that were held around the country were all mostly a big bunch of flops, despite all the vigorous corporate-controlled media coverage. Meanwhile, on the other flip side of the fake left-right paradigm, again, we're nonpartisan here, both major parties are completely fucked. And anytime real grassroots starts to break away, we see this. Take Our Country Back tour, kicking off in Tulsa, where 6,000 cheer Sarah Palin and Glenn Beck. Meanwhile, last night, Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert, they did great impressions, excoriating easily the highly worthy of being excoriated Glenn Beck. All these talking heads keep us in the fake left-right paradigm. You know, we covered several months ago when Tom Braden died, the guy that was the basis of Eight Is Enough. He pioneered Crossfire on CNN, you know, where they have the left-right setting up and furthering that fake-ass dichotomy. Tom Braden was, of course, CIA. Keeping you in the box. The Associated Press sums it up quite well. Obama evokes fear, calls for courage. That's worthy of The Onion. But that's what they do. Still following the same bogus war of terror, wars of aggression based on lies, and the questionable events of 9/11. Still following it to this day. Change, hallelujah. And then it gets even worse. First, Obama went to Ohio to pressure Kucinich at a healthcare rally. We have videos of that. But worse than that, and articles from InfoWars and Raw Replay and Willie Loman, Kucinich kisses the ring as Obama deceptively sells totalitarian care in Ohio. Kucinich flip-flops, voting yes on the healthcare bill. Or, as Willie Loman puts it in much more four-letter terms on the page, Kucinich sells us out. We note an Associated Press investigation, premiums will rise under the health plan. But as I glance to Google News right now, we do see that Oregon Representative DeFazio is now voting against the health care bill. We don't have time to dive into all of this. You have to know that if they wanted you to have health care, you'd have it, and they could deliver it in the same shock and awe manner that we can deliver death and destruction around the world. Forcing a bunch of poor slobs to buy overpriced insurance from the same gangsters and banksters and corporations that cause the problems and poses our saviors. That's the theme. Lieberman-Collins bill to weaken whistleblower protection. We reference that frequently. James Corbett of CorbettReport.com has been following that story well, again with his recent interview with Sabelle Edmonds. Do you see this meme? The military attacking WikiLeaks. Weakening whistleblower protections. Oh, and there was a brief good note from the New York Times. Henry Kissinger hospitalized in South Korea. I keep waiting for his plane to be diverted to Chile or Cambodia. Alas, not yet. Hawaii considering law to ignore Obama birthers. That's from the Associated Press and was staring me in the face on Yahoo the other day. They were sending that out large to everybody. And our last note from Sovereign Society, Obama continues domestic militarization of the U.S. It all continues unabated. Except there's much less money and food to go around now. But the technology's pretty cool. There's an amazing story, again, by way of allgov.com and tons of other sources, Zero Hedge, Naked Capitalism, The New York Times. There are videos, documentations, all tying into this. We cover this on the latest New World Next Week episode. What did Geithner know, and when did he know it?
It is a 2,200-page report, 15 months in the making, laying out nothing short of a criminal case against Lehman Brothers, whose collapse, you'll remember, a major signpost in the financial meltdown that we have still not recovered from, nor have we reformed the system that created it in the first place almost 2 years in. I want you to think Enron, accounting fraud, except this time the entire U.S. economy was brought to the brink, in part by one firm that was cooking its books. Enron basically brought California's power structure to the brink. Lehman, along with the rest of the banks, brought our entire country and the global economy to the brink. How'd they do it? Well, using a method, a complex method. Remember, a complexity is how Wall Street steals, effectively. This was called a repo transaction. Simply put, a repo transaction is an agreement where one company transfers an asset to another company in exchange for short-term cash. Think of it like a pawn shop. But this exchange comes with the agreement that the borrower will pay back that cash and take back those assets, whatever they've pawned effectively, at a specific date. It's usually done within a week or so. If you just need a little short-term cash, you got something that's illiquid, you give it to the repo guy, he gives you some cash, you move on. It's like me asking Governor Spitzer, who coincidentally happens to be here today, nice to see you, Governor, to lend me, let's say, I don't know, $50 billion for, I don't know, my trash can. That's actually not worth anything. Are you up for that?
For you, Dylan, anything. Right. $50 billion is nothing.
Here's a trash can. $10 billion. Thank you very much. So now I have my $50 billion, and I'm able to hide my trash can. Now, the governor doesn't care because he knows I'm going to pay back his $50 billion, and he's going to give me my trash can back in about a week. But while the bank regulators and Wall Street, while I have to file my quarterly report, I'm going to show them the $50 billion in cash. So while everybody's looking at my balance sheet, they see this, the $50 billion, instead of the pile of troubled assets, or in my case, the garbage can. In Lehman's case, it helped them hide their debt, their garbage cans, from everyone while showing off their money, which allowed them to take more risk at Lehman Brothers and in the process pay themselves more money by perpetuating the fraud. This, of course, until the whole thing blew up. Now, keep in mind, when I talk about taking money, I really mean taking money. Lehman Brothers CEO Richard Fuld, for instance, paid himself with schemes like this. this, $500 million in personal compensation during his tenure at the firm, according to the FT. Now, if you're running a nice accounting fraud like this, you could pay yourself a lot of money, too. Now, back to these repos. It's something, as I said, that's actually often done within the banking industry because they'll need short-term cash and they've got things that can't liquidate immediately. But there was one key difference with the way Lehman did it. Instead of categorizing these transactions as a loan, as I just described with the governor, they described them publicly as a sale, never disclosing that they would ever have to pay back the $50 billion they borrowed for those assets. That is not legal. And don't just take my word for it. The report, again, out of the 2,200 pages, this is a quote, Lehman's failure to disclose the use of an accounting device, this repo transaction, to significantly and temporarily lower leverage, that's their risk, at the same time that it affirmatively represented those low leverage numbers to investors as positive news, created a misleading portrayal of Lehman's true financial health. The result? Lehman wildly inflated the value of their company in the days before and after they issued their quarterly reports. In the last quarter of 2007, they hit $39 billion in troubled assets using this technique. In the first quarter of 2008, they hit $49 billion. And then finally, in the second quarter of 2008, $50 billion. It was at the end of the next quarter when Citibank and J.P. Morgan called Lehman to pay up on all that money that the entire house of cards ultimately collapsed. And in some ways, you can't blame J.P. Morgan. You guys don't have the money. It's a fraud. We want our money. That, down we go. It gets better. Are you ready? Emails show that Lehman CEO Richard Fold and the company's three different CFOs, for some reason they seem to go through a few of them, were made aware that this fraud was happening and did nothing to stop it. And I'll quote, in May of 2008, a Lehman senior vice president by the name of Matt Lee wrote a letter to management alleging accounting improprieties, referencing these repo transactions, that Lehman used $50 billion of repo 105 transactions to temporarily move assets off the balance sheet at quarter end, hiding the debt. In fact, each of the individuals we mentioned, the CFOs and Dick Fold, are required by law to sign off on each of their quarterly reports. Not to mention, they're forced to sign off on each of their annual reports. Those reports classified these transactions not as loans, but as sales. That is fraud. Fold, when interviewed for the report, denies it. The emails also show even Lehman's auditor, Ernst & Young, knew this was going on and did nothing about it. Quoting from the report, Ernst & Young took no steps to question or challenge the non-disclosure by Lehman of its use of $50 billion of temporary off-balance sheet transactions. Think Arthur Andersen and Enron. Somebody on the outside has to validate the fraud on the inside. The bottom line, while many Americans and many in our government would love for you to believe that the financial crisis and the transfer of wealth in this country was an accident, this report comes just short of suggesting this is by no means an accident, but instead one of the greatest crimes ever perpetrated against a group of people. This crime, an accounting fraud perpetrated by bank CEOs against the American taxpayer and enabled by the U.S. government.
That report from Dylan Radigan, and I believe it was on CNBC, pretty much breaks it down. He said it for you right there, even on controlled corporate media. They want you to think this was an accident. They want you to believe in accidental history, not conspiratorial history. So one of the numerous things that this connects to is, again, the return of the repo meme. And it's a 2,200-page report. I incorrectly, on the latest New World Next Week, say 22,000. But what this connects to, and that clip goes on, and he brings on former New York governor, former Attorney General of New York, Eliot Spitzer. And then you're talking about Spitzer and the Federal Reserve Bank of New York and the Southern District of New York law offices. You're in the territory of the old boys. CIA, Wall Street. They put people in charge of investigations to help cover things up. That's how this all rolls. And when it got to that point in that clip and they bring out Spitzer and I see where it's gone, it made me think of the work of Richard Grove of TragedyandHope.com. Linked up on The New World next week is a flashback to his Project Constellation audio piece, Message in a Bottle, that references explicitly Spitzer and the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, what this all connects to. And again, you'll find from NakedCapitalism.com and ZeroHedge.com and the New York Times and all of the links that we have for you provided, it paints the wider story. Quickly now, the rest of the Econo Crash updates posted under this Lehman Collapse story. Record-setting number of Americans pay no income tax. Detroit family homes sell for just $10. IRS visits Sacramento car wash in pursuit of 4 cents. The U.S. and U.K. moving closer to losing their AAA rating from Moody's. Former president of Just Failed Bank arrested on bank bribery, embezzlement, and fraud charges. More on that from ZeroHedge.com. The Economic Collapse Blog.com asks, how can anyone claim that the housing crisis is over when the delinquency rate on U.S. mortgages continues to explode at an exponential rate? The Tobin tax, Wall Street sales tax, the Robin Hood tax. Britain and Europe demand banksters pay for the depression they created. That's a new article on Tarpley.net. 12 key policy decisions that led to the financial cataclysm. UK taxpayer will pay tens of billions of euros for Greek rescue. Webster Tarpley also did work on the Greece situation that connects to banksters like George Soros. We got pink slips sent out to thousands of California teachers. More evidence that banks create credit out of thin air. Interestingly enough, Blockbuster's latest SEC filing, Securities and Exchange Commission filing, indicates that bankruptcy is a very real option for the company. Blockbuster, bankrupt. Dead malls. Again, from the Economic Collapse blog, 11 economic headlines that make you wonder what in the world is actually going on. Some of those include the IRS visit in pursuit of 4 cents. The American dream has moved abroad. Soaring debt increases risk of social unrest worldwide. That's from NationalTerrorAlert.com. Deutsche Bank, JP Morgan, UPS, all charged with derivatives fraud. Again, are you seeing it? It all ties together. The last note from WCBSTV.com. New York State tax refunds put on hold.
Message to New Yorkers. Don't start spending your tax refund money because it's going to be delayed. $500 million worth of refund checks were put on hold last Friday, and state bean counters won't start sending you your money until at least April 1st.
I apologize that we had to do this. I hope it serves notice on the public of how serious our financial situation is.
Several hundred thousand New York taxpayers will be affected, most getting an average refund of $1,000. People who filed in late February and early March might have to wait as long as 6 weeks till the checks are in the mail. The governor said the move was unavoidable, and he is also planning to withhold $1.5 billion in school payments and aid to local governments.
The damage of at this time would be far worse because if we do not pay our debts on time, it thrusts the state into a downgraded credit rating.
Tell that to people who are counting on the refund money to get them through these tough economic times.
You got to pay them. And when they got to pay us, don't worry about it.
I don't think it's fair. People need the money.
It seems like they're pulling out all stops to dig into the people's pockets to make up for mismanagement of state funding.
It would be bad for people that have plans already with that money. It's awful. Hopefully they can change that. No? There's not even hope?
No.
That's terrible.
Withholding the tax refund is sure to anger the legislature. The state Senate, which rarely agrees on anything, has unanimously passed a resolution opposing the move. In Astoria, I'm Marcia Kramer, CBS 2 News.
Now, quickly, with our remaining minutes here, we're going to leave the Econo Crash and jump to our last post on police state updates, CCTV, census, and complaints. Our first article comes from Tom Burkhart on anti-fascist calling, Beyond Orwell, the Electronic Police State 2010, which I think in this episode was best illustrated by the remote automobile immobilization devices and the hacker bricking all those cars. The control grid. From Blacklisted News, 20 signs that the U.S. is rapidly becoming Big Brother. Police state. I'm sure probably containing some of these headlines we're about to go over and other headlines we've already gone over, such as UK school kids routinely monitored by CCTV. You recall the recent story of the school that sent home the laptops to spy on the kids. Here it is in the UK. And this will have to be our last clip. I have other clips prepared, but we've run out of time. But this one's worth it. DHS unveils mobile mind screening checkpoint.
Under the Future Attribute Screening Technologies, or FAST program, the Department of Homeland Security is developing innovative physiological and behavioral screening technologies to streamline the screening process at security checkpoints. In support of this program, Battelle has partnered with industry leaders Farber Specialty Vehicles and Draper Laboratory to design and develop a portable research facility for the development and demonstration of innovative security screening technologies, the FAST Demonstration Laboratory. The mobility of the FAST Demonstration Laboratory allows security officials to quickly and efficiently establish security boundaries at any location, making it useful for everything from large sporting events, border crossings, or airports. The screening mobile module provides a checkpoint to establish or supplement security facilities at points of entry. At special events, attendees pass through the screening mobile module. The unique low-floor trailer design ensures accessibility for all.
Doesn't that make you feel better? Moving right along from the Telegraph, appropriately enough following that, Minority Report digital billboards watches consumers shop. And from the New York Times, tracking electric use could also allow utilities to track you, too. DHS and industry to try fusion centers for classified data swap. IRS cranks up hysteria in the wake of the Joe Stack attack. There is a clip from Judge Napolitano. And we ask the question, did you get an unconstitutional census form? Asking about how many toilets you have. How many toilets you have doesn't relate to how many representatives your state needs in Congress. Independent.org goes into the census data, not so confidential after all. Military Mexican helicopters hovering over Texas homes. More on that from mySanAntonio.com and National Terror Alert. Ohio keeps prisoner alive so that he can be executed. And he was. U.S. citizen accused in Yemen killing had been under FBI watch. Child rape charges rock the TSA. Meanwhile, they plan to make their full body, naked body scanners mandatory at U.S. airports. Meanwhile, hundreds in the U.S. file complaints over the naked body scanners. Run, run, the dangerous conspiracy theorists are coming. That's from the Of Goats and Men blog. Man wearing a Freedom or Die t-shirt stopped at the airport. That's from Raw Story. It was described as an incitement to terrorism by airport security. Domestic cyber terrorists sought in Poughkeepsie. And then now we have Jihad Jamie, Colorado mom arrested in terror plot. Last week we went over Jihad Jane and how this all ties in to homegrown errorism and this supposed radicalization of people who turn out to be patsies or dupes with handlers. But we have another clip. Again, you got to go to the page and get this on the police state updates. Corporate media hyping the arrest of another blonde terrorist, white Al-Qaeda, if you will. Some more thoughts on Jihad Jamie and Jane. An interesting one from a site called copblock.org. They call it standing your ground against the police, but you can watch it and maybe wonder if you're not provoking the police. Military exercises on tap for Fort McCoy. That's from the TomaJournal.com. HR 646, prepping for civil unrest, possibly. And finally, we're going to leave you with a bad taste in your mouth as we prep for next week. Meridian Naval Air Station in Mississippi, as well as other military installations around the country. Get ready for the Solid Curtain Citadel Shield terror drills, war games, military desensitization PSYOP exercises beginning March 22nd, this coming Monday, 322, the Skull and Bones number. Quickly, my friends, we'll reference some of the creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. Naval Ocean Systems Center. General Electric. Lockheed Martin, both, interestingly enough, out of Royers Ford, Pennsylvania. And lastly, Waste Management out of Clinton, Pennsylvania. They Googled Captain Jonathan Bayless. He is, of course, one of the numerous military guys connected to the missing rogue nukes from Minot Air Force Base that have all turned up dead. I told you I'd leave a bad taste. This has been episode 162 of MediaMonarchy.com. We are still accepting $10 donations for the new DVD, 2020 Hindsight, Censorship on the Front Line. Your donation helps support alternative media like Media Monarchy. And that's how this all keeps working, my friends. It's March 19th, the day before the equinox on 2010. This has been episode 162 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name's James Evan Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, begging you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.